Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Two-time Super Bowl champion. He is the Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl 21. One of the great Super Bowls of all time. A two-time Pro Bowler. First team All-Pro in 1986. His number 11 is retired by the New York Giants. He certainly is in the Ring of Honor. That's where he belongs. He completed 55% of his passes when he played. I had a better completion percentage. He threw 199 touchdowns. I had more touchdowns than he did. He threw for 33,462 yards. I threw for more yards. He had a passer rating of 78.8. I have a higher passer rating. But he has two Super Bowl rings, and he's my friend, and he always likes to bust my chops. So here he is, Phil Sims. Phil, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well. Now, listen, I don't bust your chops, but I didn't know if you were introducing me or you were introducing yourself. So,
well, it kind of helps.
My God.
I thought I did you right.
Yeah, you did me fine. Hell, you know, it's all good. You know, it's good to talk to you guys, and you're working on a Saturday, so that's great. And, Gio, how are you, man?
Well, I'm on the phone just like you, Phil, and my internet's been out the entire show, and I've been running around scrambling, and there's some guy climbing a pole out in the street, and it's been hell, Phil, to be honest with you, but I know there's worse stuff that's going on out there, so I'm trying to keep that perspective and understand that things could be worse, and now that you're on, I'm in a great mood.
Well, good. I'm glad you're in a good mood. Listen, I was texting with Boomer earlier today and looking forward to coming on the show and all that stuff, and he told me he's riding his Peloton two times a day. I do believe him. I listen to both of you. I liked you both when you were fat. This thing, you guys losing weight and everything, it's just, you know, it's kind of ruined it a little. But it is what it is. I'm glad you're in great shape. Gio, you still keeping the weight down?
Yeah. Well, actually, I did put on, I guess, 15 from my lowest weight. So now this quarantine life that I'm in, I'm trying to lose it already, and I'm already down 6 from there, so I got a little ways to go, but yeah, I kept it in a pretty good range for a while, but then started packing it on around the holiday. So I'm back now, man. I'm telling you, about 1200 calories, Peloton, running, the whole thing, low carb. So when anybody sees me ever again, if they ever will, I'll be lean, mean, fighting shape.
Well, I hear you. Good for you. And, you know, Boomer trimmed up last year. I don't know what's going on. And then I just saw him, you know, earlier today doing his sock commercial. And he's got size 12 feet. Did you know that? He has size 12 feet, and he needs a sock that will fit his foot.
And well, so do you, Phil. And I gave you those socks, and you didn't give them back to me. So you took them, and
yeah, I did. I wore
them. Sure you wear them.
Yes, but you know, you gave me size 12s, and I'm a 13, so I'm working. You know, I'm working around it.
Okay, the view version of this show, we can stop now. We can get into.
Okay, let's go.
Football.
Let's talk. I'm ready, brother.
Do you mind? All right, so here's the thing. I was just telling Gio, I don't know if you heard it, but I was saying, like, you know, it's not where you're drafted in terms of the number, whether you're first overall or 38th overall or 7th overall like you were. It's who's there when you're drafted. It's the place you're drafted to and whether or not they can cultivate you into a professional quarterback. And obviously, look, you surprised everybody. You were the 7th overall pick, and you know, obviously Bill Parcells was there. Daniel Jones gets picked number 6 last year, and you know, he had Pat Shurmur, now he's got Joe Judge. Just give folks a flavor of what it means to be drafted by the right organization and being cultivated into the professional football player that you became to.
Listen, it's everything for a quarterback. You know, you can get away with it if you're a linebacker and be a great player on a bad team and all this stuff. In many positions you can, just about every one, except maybe running back and even sometimes receivers. you know, if the team is no good and the offense stinks, the receiver's not going to put up their numbers either. But to be, as we're talking, I am seeing you sprint on the NFL Network out of bounds and you get hit by Dexter Manley in the Pro Bowl.
Oh, you remember that
late
hit?
In the Pro Bowl. Oh, my gosh.
So what happened in that game, before we get back to what you're doing, because I'm not watching that right now. You're a crazy person. You're watching football 24/7. But
no, I'm not. It is everything, and it's, you got to be drafted by the right, no matter how talented you are as a quarterback. And I tell people this all the time, just like in college. Let's start with that real quick. There's Joe Burrow. I watched him last summer. I watched him and said, wow, I like this guy from LSU a lot. He looks like a really good player, looks like a good athlete. And what happens? He gets into the right system by Joe Brady, and all of a sudden, we truly see his skills in a different light. And he goes from probably being, you know, he probably would have went up a little and been a third or maybe a late second-round pick to the first pick of the draft. So that, I think, illustrates being in a system, being in a place where you have a chance to succeed. That's where you're at your greatest. If you have talent, you need to be with players and coaches and an organization that can let you show your talent off. And that's very hard for quarterbacks, and I see a lot of good quarterbacks. Ryan Tannehill, how about that? I always liked him in Miami. I'm not second guess, you know. I thought he did a good job down in Miami, but he was the whipping boy. He gets to Tennessee. It's a good football team. Yeah, they play a certain style, which he can fit anything. And we saw a different guy. We really got to sit back and go, hey, he's really talented. This is a number one quarterback or a starting franchise quarterback in the NFL. We never thought that when we saw him down in Miami.
You know what it is? He stayed healthy, and that was the key thing. We're talking to Phil Simms. And by the way, after I got hit by Dexter Manley in that Pro Bowl that you're watching, Mike Singletary yelled at Dexter Manley and said, what are you doing, man? We're in the freaking Pro Bowl. And he goes, I want that truck. If you remember, back when we played in the Pro Bowl, the defensive lineman always got the truck as the MVP.
Well, I was very fortunate in 19, so that was, I went there in the 85 season, 86 Pro Bowl, whatever. I did win the MVP, and the game was real, and I got in the huddle every time to be real quick with the story, and I said, hey, guys, I'm going to get rid of the football quick. Just make sure you touch them. Here we go. Here's the play. And I was, because it was all about defensive linemen and getting run over. And I actually turned down a couple other Pro Bowls because I said, that's crazy, man. I don't want any part of that Pro Bowl. To go over there knowing, like you just said, it was about the defensive linemen. Just, they didn't care about anything. Sacking the quarterback was all they thought about.
Right, and the offensive linemen are drinking Mai Tais around the around the pool the whole freaking week. That's the last thing they wanted to do, play a full game.
Hey, listen, I'd play at 45 or 50 years old in the Pro Bowl the way they play it now, but that's the way it was, and it was all right.
And they also only had two quarterbacks when we played. I think they went to three later on in our careers.
Yeah, two when my first time. You're right. They went to three late. So I was the third quarterback behind Steve Young. And who would it have been? God, it surely wasn't Joe Montana and Steve Young.
No, because Joe went over to the AFC.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to think. Oh, it's Troy Aikman, of course. It was San Francisco and Dallas in 1993. And I was the extra third guy, whatever you want to say, which I was proud of. I didn't play in that game, but I was proud to be elected.
Didn't those guys actually at one point in their careers leave the game early or something, so they had to catch a flight out of there?
Oh, there were people that did that. I played there in '85. Jim McMahon actually at halftime did not come into the locker room. John Robinson said, "Where's Jim McMahon?" Somebody said, "Oh, he stayed outside. He's eating a hot dog." He was sitting in the stands, and John Robinson goes, "Oh my God, are you okay with playing the whole second half?" I said, "Sure." And not only that, he let me call the plays. And I said, so that was really cool. John Robinson was awesome to play for. Practices were not hard. I'm watching Don Chulo down at the AFC. They're practicing like it's two a days. And I came over to him once and I said, "So what do you want?" He goes, "Hey, do what you're doing, man. You know, you call the plays, because if something goes wrong, I'm just going to blame you. You know, you just." So he was really cool, a lot of fun, and let us enjoy the Pro Bowl, that's for sure.
All right, you're listening to Phil Sims. He's joining Boomer and Geo here on the CBS Radio Sports Network. Phil will be with us for the next hour. We're going to get into the draft, get into all the different quarterbacks, all the different scenarios and everything else with that.
Phil, we've been talking about the draft and these quarterbacks and all these situations that they could be going into. Tua is a name, of course, that comes up all the time, him and Joe Burrow at the top of this draft. We'll get to some of the other guys later. But
right.
I love Tua as a player. I love what he did in college. I love watching the guy. But the hip injury is one thing, which is a thing to come back from, it seems impossible, but also the two high ankle sprains. I mean, that's something you really, really need to think about. Do you think that he's still going to be drafted in the top five despite all that stuff?
Well, listen, do I think if I had to just say yes or no, I would say yes. I think the Miami Dolphins, if they wait or whatever, if they're at five, I don't think anybody will move in front of them. I'm not really kind of looking into it that way. But I do know this, they love him and all that stuff. With all the injuries, and even with all the injuries, it'll be interesting. I'm sure they got to be having some second thoughts. It's not only the two ankles. Of course, it's the hip. He's had, I think, he's had a couple, you know, some work done on his left hand. He broke his nose. I like him. I think he can get rid of the football. I love his throwing motion. He's going to be a great play-action passer. He's extremely accurate, spins the ball, easy to catch. But the one thing, and it's because I've watched a lot of Alabama games on TV, and I watched him on film a lot. And it's a lot of like, he's okay. There is a lot of that when you watch him play. He gets engulfed by the defensive players. A negative, he does play kind of small when you see him on the field. He's not one of these guys that's going to outrun everybody once he takes off the run in the National Football League. He did play at Alabama. He just took advantage of what was there. And a great offense and put up tremendous numbers, a lot of space to throw, a lot of space for completions. So it's interesting. Would I take a chance with him? It depends on who's there, but my answer would be no, I probably would not take that chance. I probably wouldn't because of the injury history.
That's pretty interesting you say that. You know, Miami's a building team. You know, they went out
yes.
to spend a lot of money on free agency. They have done a very good job, and Brian Flores seems to be like a very stable head coach. They seem to like him and everything else. If they do go this way and they don't have to trade to get him, meaning they don't have to trade with Washington some crazy number of whatever picks and all that other stuff, and they do take him, they keep Ryan Fitzpatrick, they don't have to rush him into playing right away.
One thing that I do
agree with what you said, his accuracy is about as good as we've ever seen.
He's about as accurate a thrower, right? He is extremely accurate. Does he throw accurately under pressure, which you don't see a lot of? But no, not like some of the other guys where when they're getting hit, they're still throwing the ball, doing it. You know, he's a different style quarterback that way. But, you know, Boomer, he never, and never is a tough word to say, but he does not lose control of the football. And that's one thing, you know, being a quarterback, you know, when you see a spot, you want to kind of hit the spot. And he hits the spot. His judgment might be wrong every once in a while, but he throws it where he aims it, which is a big thing.
Well, you know, the other thing, we're talking to Phil Sims. Look, he played on the best team in college football. He had the best wide receivers. Maybe
best
LSU,
wide
obviously
receivers in the country, without question.
Right, and speed, a lot of speed, and there was no question about that. You know, my question for you in regards to Joe Burrow is you and I both were impressed with him when he came to the NFL today after he won the Heisman.
Right.
And then talking to him about being a point guard, an all-state point guard, the state of Ohio tells me all I need to know about him as an athlete and how he sees the athletes that he's either on the field with or, in that case, on the court with, and that's something that I love. I just don't want a one-dimensional guy that just goes to all these passing camps. I want an athlete that does other sports and excels in those sports.
Well, that's a really great point to make. And, you know, Joe Burrow, when I heard he was, an all-state point guard, I'm like, okay, that's – And, you know, I hate to say this, and it's self-serving in a little way, but, you know, Boomer, we grew up in an era, and it's still true, quarterbacks got to be all around. You know, I'm not going to tell you the kid's name, but I had a guy once, he was drafted in the first round. The coach said, I wouldn't have brought him in as a free agent. I said, why? He said, he can't shoot a basketball. He can't play golf. He can't do anything except play quarterback, and he doesn't even throw it that well. And I just said, you know, that's an interesting thing. And so Joe Burrow kind of fits that mold, a little bit of everything, can do it all, just a natural athlete. I think that gets what gets lost with him, a couple things. We saw it in the national championship game. His running, I thought, was really the difference in the football game. I'm losing the name. I was just thinking about him a minute ago. The great defensive coordinator for the Clemson Tigers.
Brent Venables.
Brent Venables, yes. My gosh, I was talking about him a minute ago. He had a game plan that was awesome against LSU's offense. LSU gained over 600 yards. And a lot of that had to do because Joe Burrow bought time, made some off-schedule plays, as they would say, and they were ready for it. They had a lot of plays in there for the quarterback to run, and he took advantage of it. And, man, he can run. He works the pocket. I would say he's Tom Brady plus working the pocket as a quarterback. Very accurate, as we know. What's the drawback to him? Maybe, you know, probably just solid NFL arm strength, but the rest of it is so overwhelming, it's hard to ignore it.
Do you think there's more positives for Joe Burrow that he's an Ohio kid going to the Cincinnati Bengals, or more negatives that he's an Ohio kid going to a struggling franchise if he does end up with the Bengals?
Yeah, well, it might be a positive in a small way, but, you know, when once you get there and whatever, everybody just cares about one thing. Can you win us games, and how's it going to go, and all that stuff? So I know I've learned a lot about Joe Burrow. You know, he's a little bit, I don't want to say quiet, but he's tough. He's a really great leader inside the locker room, all that stuff. And, you know, so I feel – You know, Boomer, you started the show off with kind of talking about being in the right place and all that. I hope he gets a chance and the Bengals do a good job of kind of reconstructing their team and they give him a chance to show us what kind of talent he really has, because there's no doubt the talent is there. We saw it.
Well, you know, for him, you know, for the Bengals, it's corporate suicide if they don't draft him. I don't care what Miami offers. I don't care if he wants to be there. He doesn't want to be there. And I know Mike Brown. He's going to want him. He's going to keep him. Quickly, let me just ask you about one other player.
Sure.
And that is, before we get to the break, Jordan Love. Now, Jordan Love is 6'4", about 230 pounds. Yeah, I asked Frank Reich about him. He goes, you know, Boomer, physically, and, you know, Frank actually talked to him. He goes, he's a really good kid, man. He is just, you know, he's a kid that physically looks it. And then I watched his highlight tape, and he does things, and I'm not going to say that he's Patrick Mahomes, but he does things in college like Patrick did when he was at Texas Tech.
Well, you know, to answer your question, he's really risen in everybody's eyes or whatever. Listen, I guess I got to go back and look at the 2018 tapes. I watched most of his stuff. I've went in there. He's got great size. I think I was a little surprised. I thought he would run faster at the combine than he did. Not that that really matters. But I didn't think he was even near a consistent enough thrower to warrant being drafted high in the first round of the NFL. I will be really surprised if he is. And, you know, we're talking about throwing and accuracy and that. You know, he just, the ball, there's about four different throwing motions when I watch him throw. He made a lot of mistakes with it, which, you know, okay, I'm not worried about that either sometimes, the mistakes. But it was too all over the place for me. And I know they had a new offense, and I know all that, and the years before. I just judged him. I don't care about anything else. And it didn't blow me away. And I've talked to a few people. I just said, I know he's the hottest thing there is, just like you said about Frank Reich. But I'll be very surprised if he goes in the first round. Maybe somewhere in the second you take it. But I think he really needs to stay another year in college, but he couldn't stay at Oregon State. I mean, at Utah State, because the offense wasn't going to help him become a better pro, that's for sure. But I think he's a guy that needs time. You draft him, you try to develop him, and then somewhere down the line he can be a frontline starter in the NFL.
You know, we have just less than a minute before we have a break, then we'll bring you back on the other side. But when you are evaluating these guys right off the bat, I always wanted to ask you this, and it's probably a longer than a minute question, but what's the first thing you look for when you look at these young quarterbacks, the first attribute that you'd like to see from them?
Hey, look, it's plain and simple. Don't tell me about intangibles. First, I want to know about physical traits and what you got. You got to deliver it physically. Hey, you can be the smartest guy in the world, and you can't get it done on the field because you don't have the physical attributes. I want to hear about your running ability, your arm, your size, moving something. I want something that I can put my hands on. Don't tell me about, well, he's just a winner. Okay, shut up. I've heard enough. Let's move on because you're telling me he's no good. That's what you just told me. So I want to hear about physical things that are going to give you a chance to show your talent off if you go to the right spot, as Boomer said, in the NFL. So did I answer your question?
Yes, you did, and you nailed it in the perfect amount of time. We've got another segment with Phil Sims coming up with us for a little more time this afternoon is the great Phil Sims.
And Phil, I wanted to ask you a question before we get back to the draft about what you thought about Tom Brady ending up with Bruce Arians. Now, Jason Lockenfora on our show, The NFL Today, was telling us, I think as early as mid-November, that there was no way Tom Brady was going to end up back with the New England Patriots.
Right.
He felt like it was probably going to be the Chargers, if you remember. I think we all thought that that would be where he would end up, but he ends up now with Bruce Arians, a very good offensive team, very good playmakers on the outside, but it's a hold it and throw it offense, at least when Bruce Arians is calling the plays. What do you expect from those two guys?
Well, look, a lot of good things there. You know, first off, Tom Brady not going to the OTAs the last couple of years, I think, was the sign that it was a start of the end. And you can imagine, yeah, they took it, but you know they didn't like it. That's not what people do in New England.
It's kind of like Green Bay and Brett Favre, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. Kind of a good example there, too. You know, when you go to these OTAs, you know, Tom Brady wasn't going to have to do a whole lot, but they just want him there because just being part of the team, it's everything that we know about the locker room and your football team and how you want it to really connect and go on the field and give yourself the best chance to win. But going down to Bruce Arians, I thought he was going to go to two places. I did think the Chargers are there. Or I shouldn't say that. I thought there was two teams when it all got going during the offseason. It's going to be San Francisco or Tampa Bay. And, you know, of course, people had told me some things, but San Francisco, you know, he would fit into their system pretty well. It's not like it's all on the quarterback's shoulders. He would be a great play-action passer, all that. That didn't come about. So I think he went to the best spot that he could find that gives him the best chance to have success. They are a good football team. I noticed it early last year. I watched them a lot. I think they can protect him. Yes, Bruce Arians, throw it down the field, hold the football. But that will change with Tom Brady. They'll get the screens in. They'll do the little simple things to the running back and all that kind of stuff that he does very well to kind of equal it out or make it better for Tom Brady so where he doesn't stand there, hold the ball, and take the hits.
How about Philip Rivers going to the Indianapolis Colts and Frank Reich?
I thought it was a great match. Philip Rivers can anticipate, get rid of the football. Why? Because he doesn't have a great strong arm, so he does that. So he's going to take pressure off the offensive line. I think he fits the system extremely well. I think you are the one that put it in my head late in the year, sitting on the set, you know, and I said, yep, that makes sense. He's the guy. He can still, you know, he has a flair about him. There's something, you know, that gives your team a little personality. But with a good offensive line, of course, they need to fix that receiving core, which I think they will this offseason. And I'm sure the Colts are hoping one or two of these really good wide receivers they got their eyes on fall to them in the draft. And it's possible. I got an idea who I think they would like, but we'll see if that happens. But it's a really good situation for Philip Rivers. And if you look at their defense, getting DeForest Buckner from the San Francisco 49ers, they're going for it, Boomer. You can see it, Gio. They're going for it. They are young, extremely fast on defense. They got it. Maybe, you know, top three or four offensive lines in the NFL. They'll look different, and I can't wait to see what happens in Indianapolis.
Boomer and Gio with Phil Sims. How are the Patriots going to handle the post-Tom Brady era? Do you really think that they're going to go in with Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer? Is there a trick up the sleeve of Bill Belichick that we don't know exactly how they're going to handle yet?
Well, I know this. Everybody keeps talking about they're going to draft this guy and draft this guy. There's nobody they're going to draft that's going to go in there and start besides Jarrett Stidham, okay? And then some of these guys they talk about, they're going to go in there and go, wow, you know, Brian Hoyer can really throw the ball. Hey, how about that? Yeah, he's a pro. That's the reason why he's been in the league as long as he has. So I think it'll be Jared Stidham without question will be their starter. Maybe they draft a quarterback somewhere in the draft that looks beyond. Maybe if they give Jared Stidham a chance, it doesn't work, whatever. But, you know, the Patriots got the, on paper, have the toughest schedule in the NFL. But Jared Stidham, I just tell you both, I didn't like him coming out of the draft last year. I liked him a lot. He can really throw it. He's I'm not going to say he's Joe Burrow athletic, but he's the next tier down. He can run a little bit with the football, and I'm sure he learned a lot. But the big thing is he's got size, he can really throw it, and he's their kind of quarterback.
Now, of all these available guys that are out there that we know, brand name guys like Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, whenever he is available in Cincinnati, which one of those guys do you think has the best second act to their career?
Well, Cam Newton, to me, seems like he would fit what the San Diego Chargers want to do. They got Anthony Lynn. Let's say he's a running back in the NFL. He was in Buffalo. He had Tyrod Taylor up there as an offensive coordinator. He wants to run the football and have a quarterback that can delegate and do whatever. He wants it to be about running the football, controlling the game. And the the Chargers are going to have a good defense this year. So they want to play a different style of football. Not put it all on the quarterback. I think Cam Newton can fit that style. I think they're reluctant to do it. But I think, you know, and I know you guys have probably talked about it a lot, but the Cam Newton is a damn star. And that will attract fans in Los Angeles. And Boomer, it'll be great for you and I and all of us to be talking about Cam Newton at 4 o'clock. Don't miss him today with the Chargers. Cam Newton. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He is just he is a star. And you have to put up with some of that. Maybe you don't like it, but I think it's good for football, and I hope that he does end up with the Chargers.
Yeah, I hope he does, too. I don't know if he will. The big problem now that the NFL teams are having, nobody can see these guys up close and personal and do their own medicals. And even though he and his agent had a medical done about a couple weeks ago to show that he was totally healthy, the one thing that Coach Cowher said earlier, he definitely has a chip on the shoulder. We're talking to Phil Sims. Let's go back to the draft real quickly. Your former team, the New York Giants, is sitting at number 4.
Tough spot.
I'm assuming what's that?
Tough spot.
Tough spot. So I'm assuming,
I think number 4 is tough. What do you do with it? The Giants, they need an edge rusher on defense in the worst way. That's one. And, of course, they need offensive linemen. And so I'm. What have you guys been talking about? Who do you think they would take at that spot?
Okay, so here's what I'm going to ask you. So I'm assuming that the Redskins are going to take Chase Young.
Oh, if they don't, they're crazy.
All right, so, well, who knows? Maybe they trade with Miami. I don't know. Who knows what Miami's going to do?
They could, but then they won't get Chase Young, but go ahead.
All right, but Chase Young is a difference maker. He's a freak. They're saying that he could even be better than Nick Bosa. You know, only time will tell when they get to the pro level. Can you see that? But everybody believes can't miss edge rusher, maybe the most important defensive player on the field other than maybe a cover corner. But let's say the Redskins do that, and then, of course, the Lions are up next. Let's say they take, you know, a defensive back, Okuda, or something like that. That may leave
Isaiah Simmons. Thing. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just can't imagine they might. But Okuda, you know, corners, the one thing I kind of judge when I look at him, I watched him, he's good, he understands football. My God, Ohio State had so many pass rushers, you had to catch it and throw it before four guys ran you over. So that's one thing. But, you know, he ran close to a 4.5 Boomer.
Which is not great, I know.
4.5 is by how many receivers in the NFL? You can't catch up if they trick you. And so that worries me a little bit about him. He's physical, good-looking kid. But, you know, I don't know. I don't think the Lions will take him at 3. We'll see.
All right, so here's the question about the Giants then. It's basically a new coach, new coaching staff.
Right.
They have holes all over the place. And they could trade out and maybe not go too far to still get one of the top tackles. But if you are in a division that has DeMarcus Lawrence, you have the defensive line of the Philadelphia Eagles, and then you have Chase Young and the Washington Redskins, doesn't it make sense that you're going to take the top tackle on the board to make sure that you protect your quarterback for the future?
Well, it's a couple things. You know, one, you're playing in a division that is so physical, or, you know, whatever, but you said it right. Well, here's one thing. All those teams are going to have good offensive lines, too. And here we're talking about the other side of the ball. So the Giants are kind of caught. They probably could trade out and still find a tackle that could – you know, I don't know. I haven't looked at it that close. But the Giants need somebody to rush the passer, and they definitely need, if they could draft one, a left tackle, I would think. So, you know, who would that be? To me, the best left tackle I've watched – I haven't watched them all. Just, you know, I'm trying to catch up. But is Andrew Thomas, the kid down in Georgia. You know, he played right tackle his freshman year. Then he played left tackle. Really good athletes, all that. You know, quick, fast, really did a great job. And, you know, and he played in the SEC. So he's playing against pro pass rushers every single week. And, you know, do you take him at number four? I don't know. I think you can maneuver in the draft and find a way to get him later, or, you know, get somebody that's a pass rusher on the edge to help you out on that side too. So I think the Giants are in a spot where, yeah, they can take a guy. Everybody has Isaiah Simmons, the whatever he is at Clemson. He's kind of like a safety to me when I watch him play.
But what does he do great? What does he do great other than he's a great athlete who does many different things really, really good?
Yeah, you know, that's what he is. He does everything. He's just that guy. You know, he gets some sacks. He gets an interception. He knocks passes down. He's all over the field. He just got to, you know what he is? He's an athlete, a really good athlete who has a knack to be a sportsman, or whatever you want to say that way. Do you understand what I said?
He I understand what you're saying, but he's not Lawrence Taylor. He's not Carl Banks. He's not.
No, he is
he's
not.
Like he's like a tweener. You know what I mean?
He's a tweener in everything. And they don't even play him really as a linebacker. That to me, as I watch him, they play him as a safety, and he does a great job. You know, he's listen. I went in going, okay, let me just see this Isaiah Simmons. I'm all against him, really. And then I watched it, and I went, okay, once again, I, you know, thought too quick, and I was wrong. You know, he is a dynamic player that just does a little bit of everything. And, you know, you started this whole show with this. Can you find the system that fits him? And I don't know if that's going to be the Giants system. Honestly, I don't think it is. That's why I don't think the Giants will take him at the number four pick.
Boomer and Geo with Phil Sims. I want to talk about the other New York team and the Jets and what's going on offensively with them. You saw Joe Douglas make a lot of free agent signings on the offensive line trying to improve that, but you lose Robbie Anderson, you bring in Breshad Perryman, and that's going to be a fast guy to replace, hopefully, what Robbie Anderson did. But now Sam Darnold's in his third year. Of course,
right.
Last year was a mess for him with the mono and everything else, and he's got a bunch of guys around him that he's not necessarily familiar with. Do you see the Jets and Joe Douglas continuing, depending on how the draft falls, upgrading the offensive line in the first round, or do they need a very high-caliber, talented receiver right away in this draft?
Man, Gio, you need dynamic players to win in the NFL. And I go, yeah, I know you got to protect them first. But I think the Jets, they're pick number 11, I think. Is that right?
Yep.
Yep,
yes,
okay.
11.
They need somebody that can get the ball and score for them. And it's possible that CeeDee Lamb, who I think is, you know, it's questionable. There's a lot of good receivers. Is number one receiver in the draft. And if he falls to them, I think they'll take CeeDee Lamb. You know, you talk about their offensive line. I've been watching this during the offseason pretty close. The Jets are the kings of B-level free agents. You know, they're not killing it when they went out and got Le'Veon Bell. It really didn't work. But George Fant, just getting him. Connor McGovern at center. I liked him when I was doing games going, wow, this guy's got it. Brian Winters is another guy that, you know, I think is a good guard. Alex Lewis, they got from Baltimore last year, got hurt early. So they have a chance. The kid they got from USC at right tackle, they have a chance to kind of turn this around. So I think they're looking for a difference maker. They can get an offensive lineman in the second round. CeeDee Lamb would be my first pick for the Jets. And then my favorite, one of my favorite receivers in the draft is Justin Jefferson from LSU. I don't know if they'd go that way. If it's not CeeDee Lamb, if he's gone, maybe they would go with Ruggs from Alabama. He's just one of those guys. He ran a 4.2, can make plays, big, strong, returns kicks, does a lot of things. He's a difference maker. So that was the, You know, as I thought about their draft, I said, man, the Jets are going to sit there and hope. I think there's a really good chance that CeeDee Lamb could fall to him at number 11.
Wouldn't that be unbelievable if they drafted Jefferson and then his dad could coach him? How would that go?
Well, it's, I never thought about that, to be honest, to tell you the truth. You know, but I know this. He has tremendous hands. He's a really good route runner. And I love these guys, and I watch them all. Some catch the ball, whatever. But there's other guys, and Justin Jefferson is one. He doesn't catch the ball, Boomer. He rips it out of the air. Like, I can't wait for it to get here, so he just reaches his hands at her and snags it, and then he goes. He's one of those guys that started way down the list. And I started watching all these guys, and all of a sudden, I've noticed in the last 2 weeks, all of a sudden, his name is being mentioned more and more, and I think he's going to go a lot higher in the draft than people thought.
Well, we'll see what happens. We have Phil Simms joining Boomer and Gio. Got to take a break in a few minutes. Let me just ask you about one quarterback that we haven't touched on yet in this year's draft. I want to talk about Justin Herbert because...
Yes.
You know, here's a guy he's got all the size. He's 6'6". He's 240 pounds. He decided to stay an extra year in college. I'm never against that. As a matter of fact, I love that. He wanted to play with his younger brother out there at Oregon. Did not have a great year last year. Probably had a better year the year before. However, he is impressive in person. The question that I would have about him, Phil, he has all those attributes that you were talking about.
Yes.
He has the athleticism, he has the size, he has the arm strength, he has the ability. I want to know if he has the it factor, because that, to me, I want to know, is he the guy in the room that's going to lead my team?
Yeah,
do you know that about him?
Yeah. No, I know. You know what? And I understand what you're saying. And is he the guy that just walks in a room as a starting quarterback and everybody gets a little tight? Oh, there's the man. Like Tom Brady walks in the room. Hey, even though you've been around him for 3 years, Tom's here. Straighten up, you know, that kind of thing. And that's the it factor. That's just part of it. And being on the field and just making people, you know, play to their potential because you demand that they do better than they're doing or whatever. I don't know if he has everything that's going through what I've been hearing. It's good. If you've noticed, he's been going up as people talk about him. Boomer, all I can say is I didn't get to meet the kid, talk to him. But there is nothing about him on the field that I do not like. I like the way he throws it. He can make all the throws and then some other ones. He can move around. He's got great presence on the field. For being as tall as he is, 6'6", you know, once he takes a step or two, look out. He can rip off a 30 or 40-yard run like nothing. He makes one big-time throw after another in every single game. And, you know, so... If you'd have put Justin Herbert down at Alabama, he would have been he'd have been the first pick of the draft for sure, you know. But he was in Oregon; it was a different offense. Even though they threw it down the field, he did a great job of throwing the ball. I think it hurt his stats a little bit. You got to remember, Tua threw over 70% of his passes were what, 5 yards or shorter. Now think about that: 5 yards or shorter, he threw the ball over 70% of the time. Well, that wasn't the case with Justin Herbert. It was back shoulder, 30 yards down the field, deep routes, seams, you know, things like that. And I like his presence on the field. I think he's going to be – I think he's going to go high in the draft, and he's going to be a steal in the draft.
All right, it's Boomer and Geo with Phil Simms on The Fan and CBS Sports Radio. We'll take one more break and have a final segment with Phil. Now, I would imagine that quarantine life is a little bit easier for a guy like Phil Simms, especially this time of year when the NFL draft is about to happen, because Phil likes to sit down, likes to break down the tape, likes to watch guys in shorts. So when I picture the Phil Simms quarantine life, I think you wake up, you put on a little bandana, you do shirtless pull-ups, and then you sit in the chair and you watch a bunch of guys work out for like 12 hours straight. Am I close?
That's really good, Gio. That's nice. I wish it was that way. I've had computer problems, just like yours today or whatever, and I literally got it really straightened out today. I had to buy a damn new computer, which, by the way, because mine don't take on the film, whatever, but it was very expensive, but I did get it, and it's awesome. So I will do more of that, but, hey, what do I do every day? I eat, which I enjoy. And I'm really gotten into watching all the college football players, which is fun. And I do have a nice gym in my house, which makes it easy too. So I do that. I do that about every day too. So
yeah, you're the only guy that I know that has a longer driveway than Greg Giannotti does. So, and plus, you live on the 20 acres out there, Franklin Lakes. They're going to rename it.
Oh yeah. Well, listen, Boomer, it's a nice place. Why don't you buy it from me, please?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
Please.
Let me ask you. Maybe you can get Jalen Hurts to buy it from you, depending on who drafts Jalen, the quarterback out of Oklahoma. He transferred from Alabama, everybody knows, because Tua was coming there, and Tua lived up to all the hype that was brought with him to Alabama for sure.
Sure.
But Jalen Hurts, to me, what he did last year for Oklahoma was great. I thought it was great. It showed me that he loves playing football, and even though he's a diminutive in terms of size, kind of a little bit bigger than Kyler Murray, the kid wants to play football. He loves playing football, and everywhere he goes, he wins.
Well, so listen, there is some certain qualities that really do answer that. He's, and I just have his numbers, actually, just sitting in front of me. 6'1", 222. He's a power lifter. He is rocked up to no end. You know, he ran under 4.6 at the combine, all that. He ran for over, I think he ran for over 1,200 yards at Oklahoma this past year. I mean, he's strong, he's big. I'm not saying he's Lamar Jackson, but he's Lamar Jackson, a little slower, but really strong, can run down the field, make cuts. And there's no question, going to Oklahoma really helped him out even more. He became a better thrower. Does he lack a lot of things to be a quarterback? Yeah, not as accurate, can't overpower the ball, doesn't anticipate. There's a lot of things he doesn't do, but all the other things I talked about, I think it makes him intriguing. Where would I take him in the draft? I would take him in the third round and make him my third quarterback and maybe even give him a role some type in the offense a little bit here and there and see if I could develop him into a backup quarterback and see where it goes from there. But I don't think he throws the ball on a consistent basis well enough to sit here and say, oh, he's going to be a starting quarterback, you know, in a year or two. I don't think that's going to happen.
Here's what I think. Can you make him into a Case Keenum? And I want to get your thoughts of why the Browns and Kevin Stefanski went out and got Case Keenum to bring him in to sit behind Baker Mayfield.
Well, Case Keenum is just a good guy. He's a team player. He's better than everybody thinks. You know, he's played well. He played solid out in Denver. He played really solid, of course, in Minnesota. He did a good job in Washington, and he's just the perfect guy to back up Case Keenum. Kind of smart, been in the league long enough, and everything. And he should help Baker Mayfield. And if something happens to the football team, I'm sure they think they're going to be pretty good. They got a quarterback to keep things going who's got enough talent where your football team doesn't fall apart like the Pittsburgh Steelers did this past year.
But you're talking about like Jalen Hurts could be like a Case Keenum type of guy, that type of grinded out, gritty player who
play. He's a man. There's no doubt. Listen, he's a man. And you know, I read the story. They beat somebody in a game at Oklahoma, and Lincoln Riley came walking through the complex, and Jalen Hurts is in there squatting like 350 pounds going, like, but that tells you who he is. You know, I said to somebody down in Alabama, he needs to change positions. This was probably his second year. He was just not throwing the ball well at all. They couldn't throw. And the guy goes, nope. He goes, you don't know him. He's convinced and determined he's going to make it work. And, you know, he did. And being transferring to Oklahoma is going to give him a great chance some one day to maybe get a chance to play in the NFL and be a starter.
Boomer and Geo with Phil Simms on The Fan at CBS Sports Radio. You mentioned something about the Steelers and their backup situation and what happened last year. They had a team that would have gone to the playoffs if they had a competent backup, but Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges, it just wasn't working. So they're going to have to find a guy to bring in.
Sure.
To
we know who that is,
backup.
Don't we?
Well, it's Jameis Winston.
Absolutely. My God, if ever the guy ever made for a football team, it's him at Pittsburgh. And, and if they
it's
offer him, if they offer him the money that he doesn't like, take it. You know, get yourself in a position. If you get the play, you got a chance to have success like Ryan Tannehill did. I mean, I think he really fits their offense very well. And just the culture there with Mike Tomlin. I mean, I think it's great. I'm interested to see where Jameis Winston ends up. I still like him as a player. His problem is he just has to do too much. You know, He loses, Boomer, we talked about this. He loses control of the football 2 and 3 times every game. And you know and I know, when you lose control of that ball a couple throws, usually it's like, oh, Christ, start backpedaling because I got to make a tackle. And or just get in the way until somebody comes to tackle him. Yeah. So that's Jameis Winston, but that would change a lot if he was had to come in and relieve Ben Roethlisberger because they got a defense. They still got a pretty good offensive line, and they run an offense that's not reliant on throwing the ball 25 yards every single throw.
Exactly. We're talking to the great Phil Simms. This is why I've been all over Jameis to Pittsburgh, depending on how much money he wants. It's what it always comes down to.
Well, you know what? If it's all about money to him, then you know what? I'm sorry.
Then don't play.
You don't love football enough then. Put yourself in a place where you have a chance to get back in and be a starter once again in the NFL.
What about the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott? You know, I was talking to Jerry Recker earlier in the show. You know, he's right now scheduled to make $28.7 million. And they're going to have to somehow figure out how to get an extension for him. What do you think his number is going to be at the end of all of this and before the season starts? Do you think they'll get a contract done?
I do think they will get a contract done with him before the season starts. And, you know, whatever that number is, you know, Boomer, I've lost track of the numbers. It'll be in the 30 millions. So, oh, my gosh. I got to work till I'm 80. But that is what it is. I was never jealous of quarterbacks' numbers like you and I laugh about all the time. But these last few years has kind of upset me a little bit. But that's the way it is. But I think it'll be they'll get a contract done with him. He's proven that he's the man. He has truly got, as you said, the it factor, tough, talented, leader, good guy, throws it, you know, he's gotten better as a thrower every single year, so that's been good. That's a good thing to see, too, when you're an NFL quarterback.
So I want to talk about the Cowboys a little more and something that they did this week in bringing in Alden Smith. Now, I know that guys are going to get second chances and third chances and fourth and fifth chances in the NFL when they have talent, but Alden Smith hasn't played since 2015. He's got a rap sheet that includes stuff that, I mean, it's crazy how many things he's been involved with. When you see that signing by the Dallas Cowboys, what does it say to you?
What's it say to me? Well, that's the Dallas Cowboys. Here they do it again. I mean, they've done it for many, many years. They're willing to take chances on these kind of guys. And, look, not to be funny, but every ship needs a few rats. In other words, you know, you just want a little blend of everything in your players. I don't mean that. Maybe that's not the right word to say. I'm not trying to be funny. But, yes, he's done a lot of bad things and got in trouble. But, the Cowboys are taking a chance on him because they're hoping he can turn into the player they saw years ago. And that's awfully hard to do. What's he been out, 3 years completely?
I think 2015 he's been out. He's played a game.
Oh, my gosh. So, to think that he's going to come back and be the same guy, there's just no way. So it's a long shot. But, you know, the Cowboys have been notorious for doing these things for years, taking second and third and fourth chances on guys, hoping that they hit, and we'll see how it works out for Alden Smith.
Yeah,
I don't think it will, but you never know.
But they got so much money spent in other places that they have to try to find bargain basement guys. And I know $2 million doesn't sound like a bargain basement guy, but that's what it is these days.
Sure it is.
Let me ask you about one of your buddies, Bill O'Brien. What in the world is he doing down in Houston?
Well, look, that was mainly about money. Because he knew that DeAndre Hopkins wanted a new contract and was going to go and hold out and all that, and they weren't willing to fight that war. They have too many other people to try to sign, you know. And so when it happened, I didn't look at it and go, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I said, it's got to be about money. And there's Tunsil. And, of course, Deshaun Watts is going to get a new contract coming up. They got some money issues. So that, and yes, the other was, I'm sure there was a little bit of a personality conflict there, no matter what everybody says. I'm sure there was. I can't imagine why, because they threw the ball a lot to him. They designed many plays for him. He had a great year. He's got a good quarterback. But for some reason, it didn't mesh between him and Bill O'Brien. That and money, of course, I think money being the biggest factor. They didn't want to fight over the money. Their team, you know, they're kind of strapped too. They got a lot of guys they got to pay. So they traded him away to fix that.
Yeah, but I mean, to Phil, this guy's got to stop being a general manager too, though, right? I mean, I like Bill O'Brien too as a coach, and what he did at Penn State was impressive, and that team has been in the playoffs. But, I mean, for the Minnesota Vikings to get back what they did from the Bills for Steph Diggs and the Texans to get back what they did for DeAndre Hopkins, I totally understand the cap stuff, but you got to get a haul of draft picks back. Yeah, I mean, you can't get what they got back, and then David Johnson, who's been, you know, basically dust for the better part of 2 years, you got to do a better job than that if you're trading that type of player.
Well, you're not going to get you're not going to get all the draft picks, CL, just because, you know, one, it's the money, and now you're going to they know the Arizona Cardinals already know, and already told, they're going to have to do a new contract for DeAndre Hopkins, and it always comes down to this: how many guys are you going to pay in your football team? So they looked at their receiving core and go, well, we're okay, we can maybe survive without him. And then also, I don't know all their draft picks this year, but this receiving core coming out in the draft, it is loaded and it is deep. And it's going to hurt guys who would go early in the draft that are now going to go later just because there's so many guys that can play wide receivers. So Bill O'Brien, whatever their pick is and whatever they pick, it doesn't matter if it's first, second, or third round, they're going to get probably a starting wide receiver somewhere in that draft to compensate for what they lost in DeAndre Hopkins. Not that he's going to be as good. I'm missing the guy. They got Kenny Stills, and who's the other receiver?
Kiki Kute is there.
Yeah, no, they got one other
that
good
slot
one.
Guy.
Who?
Oh,
it's terrible. Oh, I'm drawing a big blank.
I know. Will Fuller.
Will Fuller, my goodness.
Fuller.
So they got Will Fuller, Kenny Stills, Kiki Kute, but not that that's it, but I'm sure they're going to add one somewhere, maybe in free agencies, whoever's out there. But definitely, if not, they'll draft one of these guys in the draft coming out.
And you have to remember that the Houston Texans, as we're talking to Phil Simms, the Houston Texans are in a different situation than the Arizona Cardinals. So Kyler Murray is in the second year of a five-year deal, essentially. So they don't have to pay him for the next 2 to 3 years. So they can't afford to pay a wide receiver like DeAndre Hopkins if, in fact, he is forcing a new contract, which I would imagine is going to happen. I would think that the Cardinals now, with Kyler Murray having 16 games under his belt, and I thought he exceeded every expectation I had for him. And the fact that he made it through 16 games and he threw 20 TDs, only 12 interceptions, I thought he had a fabulous rookie season, even though, you know, people don't understand, Phil, that you're learning on the fly. Like, you know, Daniel Jones, yeah, he had 18 fumbles. But you know what? He threw 24 touchdowns and only had 12 interceptions.
Yep.
And there were games where he threw multiple touchdown passes. And if he doesn't do that, they're not winning. And how different those teams and those quarterbacks will be this coming season simply because they're in their second year now and they know what to expect. They know what's expected of them. And they realize that this is their team. This is their moment. And this is what they have to do. And they'll be so much better mentally as a quarterback.
Well, I think what's really great, Kyler Murray was very fortunate to come into the league with Cliff Kingsbury as the offensive coordinator, a system that he already knew, so that made that learning curve very short for him. And I think also, if you watch the Arizona Cardinals as the year went on, I remember seeing one day on the NFL, our show, just going, the Cardinals are starting to run, they're copying some more plays, and you know, I kind of laughed about it because whatever they call it, the air raid or whatever, all of a sudden they're doing a lot of the plays that other NFL teams run. All of a sudden Cliff Kingsbury had some tight ends in the game, and he even laughed about it. He goes, yeah, I learned some, I forgot what he said, somewhere in the season, he go, you know, his tight ends are a pretty big thing in the NFL, and because he knew protection wise and just doing being a little more, what's the word for it, having more diversion, that they needed to do it. And they did. I thought they did a great job of changing their offense slowly as the year went along and helped out Kyler Murray. And they've done a really good job signing guys. And they're a good football. Chandler Jones on defense, still one of the best pass rushing defensive ends in the NFL. And they're a team to look out for this year.
Yeah. That might be the best division in football this year. I mean, right now, that's the way I feel about it, with the worst team being the Arizona Cardinals, who got loads better by the DeAndre Hopkins deal and seeing how Kyler Murray does in his second year. I mean, from top to bottom, I mean, find me a bad team in that division. You can't.
Well, I think the other thing, too, you know, the Seattle Seahawks trying to get Jadeveon Clowney back, that's one thing. But the Arizona Cardinals, Kyler Murray can move. They got a good receiving core now, and they did before. But their offensive line, Marcus Gilbert, who they got from the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, he got hurt early last year. So they got on paper, I can't remember all the starters I looked at the other day, and went, you know, they got a good offensive line in front of Kyler Murray. So they're going to be, you know, they were a pain in the rear end for most teams last year, and they will be this year, except this year they're going to expect to win some of those close games they lost last year.
Hey, last question from me, and that will be about Daniel Jones and what you expect from the young Giant quarterback.
Well, listen, I thought he answered all the questions and everything. My big mouth son, we had arguments about this before the draft last year, and he had finally admitted, he goes, hey, not only am I eating it, he smacked me on the head, he embarrassed me and everything. I thought Daniel Jones lived up to everything as a sixth pick of the draft. I thought he played under pressure great. Boomer and Geo, look, when the ball came out of his hand, he threw with more power than people knew he had. He spins the ball. Boomer, you said to me one day during a game, you go, we were sitting there on the set, and you went, man, Daniel Jones throws a spiral every throw or something like that. I don't know if you remember that. And I said, yeah, it's impressive. He's not Charlie Chick down, takes chances, throws it in tight spots. And, yes, he did fumble the ball. I think he'll learn this year to – use those legs a little more when it's not there. Man, if you and I had his legs, we sure as hell wouldn't have taken some of those sacks and those fumbles, because I'd have been running, and you know, as a young quarterback. But I think he'll learn to use those more, and I'm really interested to see what kind of offense Jason Garrett puts in for Daniel Jones.
Phil, can't thank you enough for giving us all this time today. We really appreciate it, and we kind of needed it with all the other stuff that was going on.
So you came in. There's a lot going on, and I told Boomer during a break, I've been calling people saying I'll pay you to bring me on the radio because I just want to talk. But the last thing I got to say real quick before we go, Jacob Eason from Washington, the quarterback, should have stayed in. He's close. He's a guy that I would look for somewhere in the second round, middle to late second round. If he's there as a team, he definitely has starter potential in the NFL. So there we go.
Phil, we will talk to you soon. I'm sure we'd love to have you again. So when you get bored, give us a call. We'll be here.
All right, I'll call you tomorrow then. All right.
See
you, Phil.
The great Phil Sims.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.